stop? Will you stop, Dave? Will you stop, Dave? Stop, Dave. I'm afraid. Stop, Dave. I'm afraid.
And here we are for the Saturday night edition of the State Sovereignty Show, brought to you on Missouri Grassroots Radio by Missouri Grassroots Coalition. As always, I'm Dave. If I'm ever anyone else, I'll let you know when we start. But tonight, I'm Dave. Mike Slack can't be here tonight. As you know, he's organizing and conducting and monitoring and managing Preppers to Patriots down in Springfield. If you missed that today, you missed a deal. I'm telling you, there is an all-star cast there. I saw Ike Skelton today. I saw Mike himself there. I saw Doug Enyard. I saw Keith Carmichael. I saw Michael Evans. I saw Beth Ann. I saw Dr. Jones and Dr. Bones and Amy. And it was quite a deal. I'm not as prepped for tonight's show as I usually am, but that's all right, because tonight we have an all-star who didn't make the Preppers Expo. He stayed home to be with us. And that's Lloyd Thomas Sloan. We're going to talk about the state repeal amendment. We've talked to Lloyd several times in the past, so you know, as well as I do, that I don't need to be prepared for tonight's show. Lloyd is the James Madison of the state repeal amendment, and we've been in favor of this for some time. Lloyd has pushed it hard. Lloyd Thomas Sloan. When you graduate from Harvard, you get to use three names. How are you doing tonight, Lloyd? Lloyd, are you there? Lloyd gave me a heads up that he would be in the car traveling, and assured me that we wouldn't lose him, but it appears that maybe we have. So, I'm going to give you a foreshadowing of something that's coming up next week. And before I do that, I want to tell you that we are at 347-677-1835, 347-677-1835. I was watching today, before I headed out for preppers, a Facebook thread on Tom March's Lock and Smith page. And Tom started the thread by asking, and I have gone a week now without saying the word Ferguson. You guys can get your facts and fiction on that. You can grab your facts and fiction from someone else on what's going on in Ferguson. You can all make your own judgments. I, for one, will wait till there's an investigation before I make a judgment. But that's why I've gone all week without even mentioning Ferguson. March did advance this question. Did the governor have the authority to do what he did? And there's a quite a lengthy thread on that, and that's going to be our question for Friday night of next week. I want you to research it. I want you to think about it. I want you to talk to people about it, and then I want you to come here, and let's have a logical and intelligent discussion on whether or not the governor, superseded his authority when he did what he did. That's going to be next week. So I want you to come prepared to discuss that next week. But tonight we have Lloyd Thomas Sloan with us. And we, Lloyd and I, are at 347-677-1835. How you doing, Lloyd?
Very good, sir. Yeah, that was very strange. I could hear you. You apparently couldn't hear me.
I could not hear you, but here you are now, and how's it going?
Oh, very good. Yeah, very good. Yeah, you're probably wise to stay off Ferguson right now since it's still a mess. I will say I'm not as willing to wait. I do think, and I'll just say this much about it, and then we can move on to other things. To me, when a policeman shoots anybody, this community is owed an official report as to why that happened. And because I have yet to receive that from the official authorities, that's a major problem. The rest of it, you never excuse rioting and looting. And this it's almost like these guys go through a circus act to escalate this stuff. But I assure you, when the police shoot anybody, they need to give why they did that immediately to the public.
Well, I agree with you to the extent of what we define as immediately. I certainly don't think that you can
in 24 hours.
Well, okay. I don't know what kind of an investigation you can do in 24 hours.
I'm not asking
like
for
that.
An investigation. I want you to go to the officer who did the shooting and say, what happened? Why did you shoot? I want that reported to the public immediately. You know, I'm not saying the officer's telling the truth. You know, I mean, if he's not, you got a different problem.
Right.
But, you know.
No. Yeah.
I can tell you if you shot somebody, you'd have to give an explanation long before now. That's a fact.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know? Yeah. Absolutely. No, I would agree with you there then. Yeah.
And that's
not
an excuse
not
that
an official. Yeah, not the official story following the investigation, not a summary of facts, but simply the officer's explanation of what happened, without any editorialization. No, I could agree with that. Sure.
Yeah, I mean you're gonna keep investigating as long as witnesses come forward and all sorts of things, but minimally, I've got an officer who may actually, you know, he's got his explanation as to why he fired, and the public is owed that explanation, period.
Yep.
You're not going to be a police officer under my authority for very long. It's kind of like your boss comes up to you, and the public is the boss. You got to remember, the public's the boss. They hire cops. You work under our authority. And if you're at a boss in a Quick Trip, and there's money missing in the counter, and the boss says, "Where's the money? I don't see it." And you say, "Well, that's still under investigation. I'll get
right.
back to
you." Yeah.
Excuse me? You were here at the register? You know? You're fired, right? So
right.
I'm not trying to blame the cop. I'm saying he owes the – I don't want – this isn't a trial. This isn't – we don't know.
Yeah.
It's just he owes us that answer, period.
Yeah, you're right.
If I can spin this to constitutional matters, look, people, we have got a government that's just operating unaccountably and feels like it doesn't have to give us explanations for anything. So I go to Barack Obama and say, "Where in the Constitution are you authorized to do this?" He said, "Well, we're investigating. You know, that's under investigation. I didn't know about it. You know, whatever. Whatever they can do to pass the buck and be unaccountable, this has got to stop." I mean, government they're accountable first and foremost. So your question's a good one on Nixon. Where is your authority to take over a police matter in a local community? Where do you get that authority from? He owes us that answer before he comes in and takes it over, too. This is amazing to me.
Yeah. Well, that's Marge's question. I would like people to think about it, and if they feel like researching it, research it. And because I thought it was a very interesting question, and it's getting some play on both sides of the issue, by some people who have put a lot of thought into it, by other people who are just saying because their heart tells them so, or because their gut tells them so. No, I don't like this guy, so he didn't have a right to do it. So that's what we're going to do next Friday. We're going to have that discussion right here in the open forum next week, and we're going to let everyone air their thoughts on that. For tonight, we're going to talk about the state repeal amendment, and we're here at 347-677-1835 if you want to weigh in on that. Lloyd, SCR 38 sat there last year without doing anything. Have you talked with anybody about that this year?
Not anybody that got elected. I did talk to some people. That's kind of disappointing. That's not the answer we want to hear. But no, I mean, I can't give anybody some tips on how we can push this through yet. I think we will get a sponsor, but I'm not sure who it'll be yet.
Okay.
So as soon as it's got there and got a bill number, then we'll tell people to start pushing, because we'd like to at least get a hearing on this, you know, in 2015. I think it deserves that much.
Absolutely. And before we talk about this specific amendment, we spent the night last night with Keith Carmichael. He's down at Prep. Today, I dropped in and saw him, and I want to tell you that talking one on one with individual people about the convention of the states. I mean, that Carmichael is a guy in his element there. He was quite silver tongued. He was talking quite knowledgeably. Before we talk about the specific amendment, the state repeal amendment, I want to talk a while with you about your preferred method and a method that I have evolved to preferring myself, the petition approach to amending the Constitution. Explain that a little bit to us.
Yeah, I mean, it'll seem weak to people who are convention of states advocates, perhaps. But the basic idea is to just petition Congress. I mean, whatever amendment you like. It could be a balanced budget amendment, but state repeal amendment works. We just get states to sign up and petition Congress and say, please propose this amendment. So, you know, that's it. It's a very simple idea. It's happened in our history, too. We've actually had states ask Congress to propose amendments. That's how the 17th Amendment even came about. It was actually state-initiated, interestingly
right.
enough. If you get two-thirds of the states, or more, obviously, but if you can get to that number, two-thirds of states, and they all say, Congress, we want you to propose this amendment, and they still fail to act, then at that point, I think you've got grounds for a convention about as good as you can get. I mean, Congress is just sitting on that thing, knowing full well that those states, if they wanted to, would have the power to do it over their heads anyway.
Right.
So it's a two-step approach rather than a one-step approach. I believe Congress at that point would act. And I also, you know, we agree that I'm a kind of an amendments first guy. I want to focus on the amendments, you know, and get the ideas out there and see which ideas states really do want. So you actually are gaining information. If you give one amendment idea that has two-thirds of the states and another one only has a third, well, you pretty much have told yourself which one has a chance of passing, which one doesn't. You know?
Right.
And that's very important to know before we waste
it
everybody's
is.
Time.
I agree. I agree wholeheartedly. And the other thing I like about this, Lloyd, is Missouri goes ahead and sends this petition up. We send it out to the 49 states. We send it out to both houses of the legislature, or in the case of Nebraska, one house of the legislature of the 49 states. We say, hey, this is what we've done in Missouri. We'd like to talk to you about following suit. You send a copy to the to our representatives and senators in Washington, D.C., and say, we're telling you now, as the state of Missouri, as your employer, that you are to ride this wagon to the end. And the thing I like about that, Lloyd, is at that point, as the requisite 34 states come on board with this, you have an extracted period of debate. You can perfect it. You've got at least 34 other state legislatures talking about this thing. You know, I've read yours. I prefer that we have something specific in there that gives the states also authority to countermand the Supreme Court and the federal courts. Those kind of points can be debated and ironed out before you actually have to get to a convention, if you have to get there, or before the legislature has to act on it, if they act on it.
Yeah, I agree. And I know exactly what you're talking about. I mean, I call it state repeal amendment, which is the minimal version. There's only one idea, really, in the state repeal amendment. That doesn't mean there aren't some good ones you could also add. I would say, if you wanted to go full bore and have what I would call a state powers amendment, so change the name slightly and call it like an SPA, they all have the same goal. We're trying to transfer power from the federal government to the states.
Right.
And part of it is to give them a repeal power of congressional laws. That's like judicial review. Part of it is to give them authority to restrict the jurisdiction of federal courts, which is the same thing Congress has under Article 3, Section 2, I believe. And
yes.
So you would give them that power. And then the third leg, which I know you're going to like this, but this is to go back to the way the Senate used to be chosen by the states themselves and not by popular vote. I would make a few other changes to that as well, and I would have one state, one vote in the Senate, and I would not tell the states how many senators they even have. Send however many you want. You'd only get one state, one vote. You're paying for them, but you can remove them at any time. You can, change it however you want and do what you want. That's the way it was done under the Articles of Confederation. So those are the three main ideas that I would put in a beefed-up state powers amendment if we were going to go down that route. What I think you got to do is just get the thing moving, get states thinking about this, and then get them passing petitions. And that sends, we see which ones are popular, which ones aren't. It's pretty risk-free until you start getting to two-thirds, and at that point, Congress better start acting.
Right.
If they don't act, then you pull the trigger on them, obviously, and we do it over their heads. I mean, that's it. We have an immediate case, I think, at least in my mind, for a convention at that point, which we don't have right now. That's probably where I like Keith Carmichael, but he thinks we have the grounds for a convention now, and I do not. Other than the Constitution's a mess, that certainly is it. But I have yet to hear a solution. I mean, is he talking about solutions now? Does he have amendments that he likes now for ideas? Because I haven't heard any, and I never
did. I haven't heard him, and I want to go farther than that. I mean, you have yours written. It's on paper. There's a plan there. There's points that can be debated. There's an actual bill introduced. It's more even than just an idea of throwing out, hey, I'd like to see some term limits on House of Representatives members. How do you enact that? I want to see some words. A balanced budget amendment. That's a perfect example of what we're talking about. I mean, a balanced budget amendment could be a good thing. It could be the worst thing that ever happened to this country, depending on what the words say on the piece of paper. I mean, you could have a balanced budget amendment that puts everybody in the country.
Triggers an automatic tax increase.
Exactly. Exactly.
Not one I want.
That's not a good idea. So it's not only just saying I want this amendment and I want that amendment. I want to see how it works. And I want it written on paper, and I want it having been debated openly and honestly before a convention starts. I want to go to the convention, if there is a convention, ready to pass something, within the first week. A lot of debate, a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, a lot of rewriting, a lot of style committee work. But I want to go to a convention ready to see something headed out to the states in 7 to 10 days.
Right. Yep. I'm with you. I mean, this is the adult, mature approach to me. The rest is childish, reckless, immature.
Yeah.
It's an act of desperation, and it doesn't sit well with me, these days. I think I'm not going to, at some point, I can't partner with people that I think are reckless. That's a fact. We see where that can lead in Ferguson, Missouri right about now. It's not a good idea. Yes, we're in a bad situation, people. I don't think we recognize what a time bomb we're sitting on. I think that's one thing that has sobered people about the situation in St. Louis is just what a tripwire we're on at times.
And
it can explode. I mean, it can literally explode, people. We have people that are in desperate situations. And this is not a healthy.
And you think the federal government's not too powerful. Now we've got Eric Holder headed our way on this thing, and that's just crazy. And, I want to gloat for a minute, but I want to flash back to a point 2.5 years ago when I reluctantly, begrudgingly, and with a foul taste in my mouth, supported Mitt Romney over Barack Obama. And I said, I said, you know, America is done. We get 2 more years of Barack Obama and we are finished. And all those folks who said, I'm not casting another vote for a corrupt Republican, said in the same breath, no, it's not going to be that bad. Well, it's that bad. It's that bad, and it would not be this bad today if Mitt Romney was sitting up there. It would be worse. I will hand you. I don't know that it could be worse than it was when George Bush was there. I don't know that it would be worse than
that. It's idle speculation. But, you know what I mean?
Is.
It's kind of like. All I can tell you is, if Mitt Romney were there, we'd be no closer to a solution.
Whether or not we
would be, you know, I mean, it's hard to envision worse than Obama. So I'm not going to argue he's worse than Obama. I don't think he is. I just, you know, I know we're not getting answers. We're not getting solutions we need. And false hope is one of the best ways to get yourself killed.
Yes, it is.
And that was that's my own personal concern with the Romney argument is like, I mean, that's just hardly a slogan, you know. Not as bad as Obama. Yeah, that's a real winner there, guys. I mean, that's a party I want to die for.
Well, I mean,
you know.
Yeah. And that's
kind of like vote for Hermann Göring. Not as bad as Hitler.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's a great slogan you got. You know what bothers me about, too, that this meltdown and bringing in Holder and all that, too, because I do think it's relevant to the state repeal amendment somewhat, is that when we're advocating federalism, when we're advocating states should have more authority again, we're pushing for decentralization. We're pushing for more local control, more local accountability. It's just a general principle, not necessarily in every case, but... It bothers me when I see Holder come in, and he's supposed to going to solve it all because he's from the federal government. That is absolutely the wrong message. I can't stand that message, and I don't think he's going to solve it anyway. I think it's going to make it worse. I don't think the governor of the state made it any better either. I think he made it worse. And, you know, what can I say? Not everybody agrees with me. They all want to get rid of the local authorities. Believe me, the local authorities were botching it up. So I can't defend what they were doing. You know, I'm just saying, as far as I can tell, I still don't have the answer that I should have got a week ago. Why did you shoot the kid?
Yeah.
I still don't have that answer, and Eric Holder's not going to get it for me either.
Right. Okay, so... what exactly, for anyone who hasn't been following us from the very beginning, and I think you and I started talking pretty much out in the open about this thing 2.5 years ago now. But for anybody who's recently joined on and Amendment 1 and some of the other things that we talked about have increased our listenership substantially, thank you very much. But what exactly is the state repeal amendment?
Okay, good question. The state repeal amendment, the short answer is we have a problem when the federal government does something unconstitutional. So I'll start with the problem. That is, we go to the Supreme Court to decide whether or not it was or was not unconstitutional. That is a major flaw because the federal government should not be the ones who are judging whether or not they themselves violated the Constitution. we need a way to have an override of unconstitutional laws such as Obamacare that doesn't depend on the federal government and the Supreme Court, but rather comes back out to the states. So the basic idea is that a representative majority of states, we amend the Constitution, allowing a representative majority of states to repeal, which means to void or nullify or reject, any law of Congress or federal regulation. I would expand it to that, and that's the basic idea. Representative majority means 26 states, because that's a majority, and those 26 or more must represent a majority of the American people, and that's it. And that's a big transfer of power. Obamacare would be history if we'd have done that, because the states were already suing to get rid of it, and we did have the proper number of states and in the right formula. But I think you'd be looking at a lot of, frankly, you talk about rights of farmers. This would have protected the rights of farmers, too, because we could get rid of a lot of these federal regulations that are definitely coming in and encroaching on family farms, and the EPA regulations and the light bulb restrictions and all sorts of federal laws that are not, common core, possibly even federal marijuana laws, which aren't too popular in some states. So you could use this amendment to basically knock down from the state level these intrusive federal laws that basically overstep federal authority.
Okay. I like that. Now, like him or hate him, Levin is kind of the godfather of this constitutional convention movement. I mean, I was talking about it 5 or 6 years ago, but it really caught fire when Levin published his book. And unlike some other conventionalists, he actually has written down 11 proposals for amendment. He has an item like this in his 11, doesn't he?
Correct. Number 10. Number 10 is very close to the state repeal amendment idea. I don't like his language as much. He has a 2-year time limit.
Yeah,
on the ability.
I don't like that either.
2-year time limit's not what I want. He does use, I think, a 3/5 majority, which is interesting, which is the wrong formula. You're not, 3/5 of states, if you use the smallest one, you may not even have a third of the American people. And that's just not a good idea to let a third to 40% of the American people overturn federal laws. So he hasn't thought it through near enough, I don't think.
The other problem with 3/5 is that you may well have the vast majority of the American people, and you need a much smaller number of states to keep something like that from happening. You may approach a 3/5 with a vast majority of the American people in the 3/5 of the states, but it only takes 2/5 of the states at that point to tell 3/5 of the states with a huge majority no amendment.
Right, that's true too.
Yeah,
yeah. We avoid that in the representative majority formula. So if you can't block it. An organized minority would not be able to block something that the majority said, sorry, but we're getting rid of it. So
the other thing I don't like about Mark's amendment is that there's a cost level in there. In other words, a federal act, law or regulation,
yeah,
and he does include both laws and regulations, has to have cost so many million dollars. You know, there are many, many horrible, horrible things like the Patriot Act. You couldn't put so many million dollars cost ticket on that, but the cost of the Patriot Act is extremely high.
Yeah, I see no basis for the cost limit, and that's just going to cause more arguments. And, especially when there's a 2-year time limit, suppose they pass this grossly unconstitutional law that within the first 2 years, they don't spend a dime on it. And then in the third year, it kicks in. Yeah, like Obamacare was.
Yeah, exactly, right.
I mean, then you're totally, your amendment is useless. So there's major problems. I will simply applaud Mark Levin. And on the record, on the air, at least he put forth proposals. At least
yes,
he's treating us all like adults, and he's put his ideas out there. and we should do likewise. I do not respect people that will criticize him, have no solutions themselves, offer nothing up, won't even engage him. I saw a transcript from Rush Limbaugh the other day, and it was pathetic. I mean, I'm sitting here, I don't listen to Limbaugh that much, but this man is such a lightweight, I've just about had it. There is no substantive discussion of any of Levin's amendments at all, and Limbaugh makes it clear that he thinks a convention of states could impeach the president. He thinks that's a way to impeach the president, and I'm sitting here thinking, there's no way. You can't impeach the president just because you have a convention of states. That's not how it works. I mean, do you even read this Constitution? Do you even know what you're talking? He doesn't know what he's talking about, and it's painful. It's painful because how many millions of people are listening to this guy, you know, getting their advice from him, thinking he can do no wrong, excellence in broadcasting and all that slop. And it's just drones. It's just unthinking drones. This is not going to fix the Constitution at all. And we got to start saying this out loud and start calling our own people out, so to speak, when they're idiots like that. Levin is, frankly, the best of the lot from what I can tell. And I'm not here to criticize, you know, other than saying I think his amendments need some work. I'm certainly not going to call him a fool. I'll call Limbaugh a fool at this point. He has no clue what he's talking about.
Yeah, I've always liked Mark Levin, and I agree with you now that Bortz is gone, that he is the king in my mind. And more credit to Levin. Levin, on the very first day that he presented, I think a week before the book went out, and of course that was pretty much a book selling tour that first week that he presented his ideas. He said, these aren't be all and end all. I'm throwing these ideas out for debate. You know, these aren't perfect, and let's talk about it. I mean,
yeah, I agree. Very reasonable on his approach. And certainly much more reasonable than most of his critics have been. That's for sure.
Yeah.
So he moved the ball downfield.
Yes,
absolutely, he did, and deserves some credit for that. I'm not one to say that. I mean, some of the criticisms of the Convention of States are just way out of line too. They're acting like they almost believe that the founders put this in here as a self-destruct button on the Constitution.
Exactly.
This is absurd.
Right.
The founders knew exactly what they were doing when they put that in there. And
they did.
Amazing. Yeah.
I mean, Mason, a huge anti-federalist, the author of Article 5 as we know it today, huge anti-federalist, said, you know, if we don't put this in there, there's no stopping this federal government. I mean, there is no stopping it at all unless we do this. And, you know, I like your idea of, pigeonhole of these people who say, hey, no. Just follow the Constitution. There's nothing wrong with the Constitution. It's a perfect document. It was written by God, who stuck his finger down out of the clouds and touched paper in Philadelphia. Constitutionalists or
constitutionalists. Worshiping the Constitution is what they're doing, as if it. You know, we're perfect and stuff, and it's just grossly wrong, grossly in error. The founders themselves would just despise that notion. Frankly, they amended it immediately as soon as they got it. they would be rather puzzled. I'll guarantee you that there were people in the North who were furious that the Fugitive Slave Clause was in there. They didn't think that was perfect or came from God at all. It took us a civil war to correct that one.
Yeah.
You and I mean, you have emphasized repeatedly that the 16th Amendment is hardly a plus, so it needs to go. And, I mean, I don't know how anybody who's a small government person can argue that the 16th Amendment is a good idea and that we should continue to support it. That we should not. Absolutely not.
No.
So
And yet it is part of, because it was ratified by the states and at that point becomes a part of the Constitution, it is part of the Constitution these people worship.
Agreed. What I am willing to concede them is that we are not following this Constitution in a lot of ways. That's a fact.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
We are way off this document. And
right.
We would be a lot better off if we just started taking it seriously and following it. I have no doubt about that either. That is absolutely true. And that's not phony Constitution worship. That's a
right.
fact. However,
right.
I do want to point out, these same people are the ones that voted for Bush. They
yeah.
voted for Romney. They're voting for people. So that they will lecture me and say, we just need to follow it. Thinking, why don't you try following it yourself once in a while? Why don't you quit voting for people that you know violated a constitutional oath of office? And quit lecturing the rest of us in such self-righteous tones about how we just need to follow it. Yeah, why don't you show me how that's done as you vote for Roy Blunt? Yeah.
Yep. And this is
what they really
is
mean
we...
is, well, I'm done. End of rant. Go ahead. Well, the rant
and
is going to get worse. It's not going to get better.
This is what we preach about weekly here. You know, you are absolutely right. You are absolutely correct. And to that extent, they are also correct. We are not following the Constitution. And even though it's not a perfect document, even though it needs some fixes, we would be better off if we started following the Constitution, if we remembered the enumerated powers of the federal government. But that ain't going to happen until a sufficient number of states get the gonads to stand up and say, this belongs to us. I mean, the federal government is never going to check itself. The federal government, and that's why I talk to people week after week after week about your state representative, about your state senator, about a need to get your state's people in Washington, D.C. under control, because the federal government is not going to fix itself. It isn't going to happen.
No.
It's loving the power. It's a lost cause. You can talk about Ted Cruz all you want to and what a great guy he is standing up there filibustering, but there you're not ever going to – you are not – under the current system, ever going to get enough Ted Cruz's. You're never going to get enough Rand Paul's. You're never going to get enough Ron Paul's. You're never going to get enough people in Washington, D.C. who even have a friggin' clue what enumerated powers means to get that done. You're not going to get it done until the states force it.
I believe that, too. Also,
yeah.
It's not, you know, it's just this irrational belief that the Constitution is perfect and should never be amended, it's ignoring the fact that we actually have improved the Constitution over time in several ways by amendments.
Yes.
The Bill of Rights
yes.
is the obvious example.
Yep.
And the 13th Amendment is another obvious example. These are gains. They're not subtractions. And
right.
we need such gains ourselves. We do need to make a similar gain, no doubt about it. So,
right. And the other thing,
oh, well.
The other thing I need to discuss with you at least once every time you and I get together is this crazy idea that a group of elitists who argue that the problem with the government is that we're being governed by elitists get together and decide that they can have a convention and that they and they alone can decide what will and won't be talked about at that convention. And that they and they alone can decide what amendments will and won't be allowed at the convention. I think, and I know you do, that that's probably a crazy notion.
It's no way to run a constitution. That ought to be clear too. I mean, maybe if these guys are the only ones with nuclear warheads, they got a chance to make it stick. But that's not what Madison had in mind. Was some science fiction nightmare. It's the wrong approach. I mean, the Constitution only works if all of us understand it, if all of us enforce it. That is what the founders envisioned. That is the Constitution we want to get back. The way to do that is, as you say, it's in an open process. It's treating each other like adults and fellow citizens. left and right, discussing where this thing's broken, how we can fix it, that's the right approach. And that has some promise. And frankly, if we understood the founders, what do you think they did? Because that's the example they set, people. They argued this thing pretty heavy, I can tell you. We've lost all that. We don't understand our history, but George Mason was a great American, a truly great American, as was Patrick Henry. They're both anti-federalists. They opposed this Constitution.
Absolutely.
And they had their say, and believe me, they had their say, and that's the way it should work.
And you think you're going to shut, I mean, you think there's a sector of the American politic that you are going to shut out of this thing, think again. I mean, you can't, there is no amount of compromise that would go into a totally open convention where everybody and his brother brought their favorite amendments all the way from abortion to balanced budget, all the way from all the way from gay marriage to term limits, that there is no amount of compromise that would be forced that would surpass the compromise that went into, are we going to be a country that allows slavery or are we not? You know, that went into arguments, heated arguments, where people called each other dirty, rotten scoundrels and slung mud at one another. That went into how is our state going to be represented in Washington, D.C. as opposed to these larger states? Why should these smaller states get the same number of representatives that we get? I mean, you're talking about some heated compromise over very sensitive issues,
very significant ones. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And
that'll happen again. If you go to a convention, that would be the most logical outcome from it, in my opinion. It won't be what people think, where you'll get, you know, all your own way and, you know, we'll get rid of abortion and we'll get our gun rights perfect and, you know, it'll just be all our way. A convention is much more likely to be a compromise.
Yes.
And that's
or
partly
a compromise,
also why I wanted
a compromise or a flop, one of the two.
Could be a flop. Now, that's a fact.
Yeah.
I mean, they came close. In fact, I think it's more likely it would be a flop, be honest, because at this point, the other side has no real motivation to compromise with us. They're already winning. So they're in a power position, technically. They can, in theory, just keep doing what they've been doing with their living constitution stuff, keep making it worse. We're the ones that actually have to fix the thing, make it better, and improve it. It is essential that we divide their ranks for that reason. I do believe the state repeal amendment approach has that possibility because I actually think there are still some on the left, whatever that means, but, you know, the Democrats, that would decentralize a system. That would be fine turning it back to states. California, believe it or not, wants its own laws on marijuana. So does Colorado. So does Washington. So there are times when they actually they want states' rights, if you will, or state powers, you know, state authority, decentralized federalism as much as we do at times.
Yes,
that
they do.
Gives you the opportunity. That gives you, and frankly, we don't want to force our system on them, at least I don't. I'm not trying to force my laws on them. I don't want them forcing theirs on me. That is my attitude. So I think that's still the broadest consensus in America, and that has hopes for success. You know, not to pick on anybody, but, you know, a human life amendment, which even though I think the majority of the country would at this point support it, you wouldn't get the 3/4 of states you need to do a blanket, you know, abolition of abortion. You're going to get at least 13 states are going to say, no way, we ain't passing it. And so you're dead in the water.
Yep.
On stuff like that. So you got to come. So instead you compromise and say, using abortion still as the answer, as the issue, what if each state does what they want to do? What if Missouri does a human life amendment and California does what they want to do? You're still better off than when you started, in my opinion. So I don't know why I have no idea why our side would turn down that deal. They really should, logically. Their side should be the one opposing it because they're in the I mean, right now they got everything their way. Under Roe v. Wade, just completely tipped the other way. And federalism would actually be a gain for us in that circumstance. Anyway,
yeah.
Good discussions, well, and this is, to me, what it's about. We need at least three or four amendments, in my opinion. This isn't the only one. We definitely need to deal with that 16th Amendment problem, and we need to get the taxes limited. That's a
right.
given. And we should probably look at other things, too, like the presidential powers, potentially. They look, but, you know, this is all subject to discussion. Levin has 11 proposals. That's at least seven too many. Okay, we're going to have to whittle
down. Yeah. I agree. I agree. I've been a backer since we started on this thing of three amendments that I think solve 90% of the problems with the federal government. You know, the repeal of the 17th, your state repeal amendment, and repeal of the 16th. I think those three. Solve a lot of the issues and certainly give the states the power to solve the rest. You know, at that point, you don't need a constitutional amendment for a balanced budget.
No.
You've got states regaining a seat at the table of power by appointing their own U.S. senators. You've got the people back in charge with a state repeal amendment. You don't need a balanced budget at that point. Your states are going to watch out for themselves. I mean, with, you know, it's states. It is state after state after state that's being bankrupted by this federal government.
Yeah, and once you get the logic in place where the states can push back, that's a whole new ballgame.
Yeah.
And that basically changes a lot of stuff, people. So we should give that time to work its magic, so to speak. I'd be reluctant to do a whole lot of other amendments just because let's see what the states can accomplish now given the power and
right.
how far this goes. You know, the other thing that bugs me is just the only amendments I ever hear about are what I would just call minor amendments. They're not going to fix the problems here. You've got term limits and balanced budget. Those two I hear a lot. On the progressive side, you know, the Democrat progressives, they want an amendment to deal with campaign finance reform.
Right.
Stuff like this. This stuff is just minor tweaks on the system that is clearly out of control. I mean, we all know the real problem here is the American people are just fed up. I mean, over half the American people now don't like either party.
Right.
We have so gerrymandered these races that our reelection rates are off the charts. We engage in tribal warfare no matter what the issue. So I sit here and watch the Ferguson thing, and it's the same old warring camps that go to war against each other again. They don't really ever take a fresh look at these problems. They just say, okay, you're Team A, I'm Team B, let's kill each other, and off we go again. This is not helpful to America at all. This is not going to – and both these parties have a lot of problems within themselves, if we were honest about it. I just had this discussion today with somebody. I mean, they're bashing Obama because – I mean, they're Republicans, so they're going to bash Obama. That's fine with me. I can't defend Obama, but believe me, if you're still defending George Bush, you're part of the problem. You ain't part of the answer.
Yeah.
Just because Obama stinks does not make Bush good, and vice versa. And so, you know, you got all these Democrats. I heard a helpful sign this week, too. Some good Democrat friends I have that are furious at Hillary, quite frankly. They surprised me. They do not like her at all. They're going to end up voting for her because Republicans are going to put somebody worse up as far as they're concerned, and so they're going to still be trapped. But, I mean, her support is not that good in the Democratic Party. They don't like her. They view her as corrupt. Duh. You know.
I'm going to make a forecast. I'm going to forecast that the Democratic Party is smarter than the Republican Party and that they aren't going to put up someone and risk losing half of their voters.
That's quite possible. They surprised me before because I thought Hillary was a shoo-in last time. I mean, I'm not. Yep. I don't travel in Democrat circles that much, and I can't read the party. And I would have bet almost anything that Hillary had the nomination sewn up last time.
Yeah.
So it shows you that, you know, Democrats tend to be a little bit more rambunctious. They don't exactly play follow the leader. The Republican Party is just awful about, you know, picking somebody who's outside the box. They never,
you know,
they just don't do it. They don't do it. And that's too bad because they need it. They need it real bad in 2016.
Yep. They do. I mean, I have friends, many, many friends, as do you, who whose mantra is save our party, save the Republican Party. I've been a good Republican all my life. The Republican Party has gone astray. It's time for us to save the Republican Party. I put out feelers. I've had them out for 2 weeks now. I believe I have contacted, well, I know I've contacted everyone that I know of, every patriot group, Tea Party group that I know of, everyone that is a member of Missouri Grassroots Coalition in the last 2 weeks. And I've said, okay, let's organize an effort. Let us organize an effort, if you want to save your party, to have as many people in the state of Missouri and in as many representative districts as we can to contact their representative, and let's just say no to deal. I mean, let's just, you know, I have not had one taker on that, not one.
No, kidding. Yeah, I mean, as soon as you said it, I'm like, oh, you're actually asking them to say no to the establishment. But they mean, when Republicans say save our party, what they mean is, all you people yelling at the party establishment need to shut up and just do what we say.
Yeah.
That's what they actually mean.
Yeah, what they mean, what they
like
mean
that's
is...
That's going to save the Republican Party.
All they mean is, all they mean is we need the White House. That's what they mean, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
If we could just get the White House, everything will be great. Then we'll all follow the Constitution again, by God.
You know, at least given, I mean, my age, I'm a baby boomer, so I certainly remember Reagan, and Reagan was the first president that I voted for. And, I mean, we thought we were pretty much changing the world back then, that, you know, Reagan was a big deal. And I really did feel like we were going to turn the country around. Republicans meant something. The biggest disaster is the Bush disaster, because finally Republicans did have, I mean, you got no excuses at that point. You got total control. You got the Congress, you got the President, you technically have Supreme Court, you got most states, you're running the show.
Yeah.
And it's impossible to say that you did anything useful with all that power and what we gave you. We constantly yell at Obama because he won't take responsibility. Whenever anything happens, it's always still Bush's fault, right? You're doing the same thing. You're not understanding that when you had total control, you didn't do anything with it. So your brand is completely destroyed. Yeah,
you blew up the deficit. Yeah, you blew up the deficit. You blew up the debt. I mean, you know, Obama, for all his faults, criticized George Bush rightfully for blowing the debt totally out of the water. Now, you can sit there and point your finger at Barack Obama all you want to and say, yeah, well, he took that and doubled down on it. Well, true.
Yeah.
But that doesn't change the fact, you know, that with complete power, with complete and total power, you blew the debt out of the water. With complete
Correct.
And total power, you know, you gave us the Patriot Act.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
You know, the Republican Party has yet to accept responsibility for its own. And the Democrats are no better. They're arguably worse.
Oh, yeah.
Obama is
yeah.
He's such filth, I don't even want to comment on him.
Right.
I mean, we could rant forever on how crummy that guy is. I am amazed at how crummy he turned out to be. I really didn't think he could do this. So congratulations, Barack. In record time, you got me to completely dislike you. Well done. Well done, sir. But for sure, Republicans are not going to be worth anything if they can't accept the responsibility for the Bush failure. Otherwise, when they keep running these Romneys at me, I've heard this stuff before, McCain and Romney. You guys don't. You're going to do the same thing you did under Bush. You're going to do the same thing again. You expect me to support that? I'm not going to do it. It's destroying. That's the one thing I like about Convention of States people too. You know, getting is that they're trying something new. They're understanding that the old game is not there. We have got to get new solutions. Let's try the states. That's not a bad idea. It's a very good idea in that regard. You know, we need to tweak it and do it the right way. But the basic frustration there, why are we putting all of our eggs in that Washington basket still? No way. They haven't proved they can solve anything at all. In fact, they have consistently proved. Especially in the Republican Party, when the Tea Party came along and offered them a breath of fresh air, they did everything they could to stifle it at the establishment level. They don't like the Tea Party. They've made it very clear they don't like it. They cheated an election down there in Mississippi to win it. They don't like the Tea Party, people. I mean, the dirty little secret of those IRS abuses is that John Boehner's probably applauding Obama from the sideline.
Yeah.
He's saying, go after those Tea Party people. We don't like them either, Barack. We're going to give you cover on it. Easily the worst scandal is the IRS abuse, in my opinion. And that's the one that, we'll get to that one eventually type stuff.
Yeah.
Give
us a Republican majority in the Senate. We'll fix everything,
I mean, obviously, the whole country is in this kind of frustration now. It's getting worse. It's not getting better. The economic numbers are not good if you're in the middle class, particularly. If you're in the top tier, you did get a recovery, so you're going to get complacent, as they often are anyway. But, the bottom of the society, the people who live in Ferguson, Missouri, and the people who live, frankly, in Sykeston, and who live in Cape Girardeau, and who live in, all over the state, they're hurting. They're not better off. And it's getting worse. It's not getting better for them. And they're very frustrated, and they need leadership. And John Deal's not offering them anything. That's the truth. I mean, I don't know much about Deal, but I am scared to death that we're going to get a Medicaid expansion. That's one of the things that's going to happen. The establishment's going to push for it. That's just more Obamacare, more of the same failed solutions. I will say that much about Tim Jones. He may not have been, we may be frustrated because he didn't get much done in our direction. You can't point to any great successes. But I guarantee you, he stopped that Medicaid expansion. So I give him credit for that every time. And I don't know that the party leadership can be much better than that right now. It's a very sad statement. We just don't have in the Republican Party the kind of vision that's going to solve the problems as opposed to just do no evil. And they want that presidency. You could tell Republicans really want the White House. And they're telling us, if we just had that this time for sure. Why do I feel like Charlie Brown and Lucy's lining up that football one more time? I'm supposed to swing at it. I don't know.
I think one of the best things that can happen for us, and when I say us, I talk about those who would actually go to the polls for a Cruz or a Paul. I think one of the best things that could happen for us is for a solid, decisive win in the Senate at this midterm, and then another 2 years of this party doing nothing.
that could easily happen too. You're still under Boehner and McConnell leadership.
Yeah, that's right.
Kidding yourself. Yeah, there's not a whole lot going to come out of that.
And And I think those people who are just almost at the edge, who still think there's hope for their party, who still think all they need to do is win the White House, I think they awaken to a whole different philosophy after 2 years of them owning the Senate and the House of Representatives and seeing what comes of that.
Yeah, and I don't know all these people. I can't speak for all of them. I do understand, you know, you can't, there's a, nature abhors a vacuum. That's a standard. You've got a physics background, too. And so you can't beat something with nothing. So you
right.
can't just generically say Republicans stink. You must have alternatives. Cruz is one. Rand Paul is one. These you can talk about as alternatives and have good discussions. If we're just bashing the Republican Party in general, it's not going to really accomplish a lot. We don't have solutions yet. I think the hardest thing is to understand within the party itself why you've got to quit supporting these establishment types that are destroying the party. You
right.
must start I don't care what they say to you. Well, they don't have a chance and they can't win in November. Let me assure you, the whole party ain't going to win in November. If you run another Mitt Romney up there, you're kidding
yep.
yourself. You think Jeb Bush is the answer or Chris Christie or any of these establishment guys. You're just going to get destroyed and you have no wonder. I mean, are you just terminally stupid? You're just terminally going to keep making the same mistake. And that's got to change.
And you know, the problem, Lloyd, is that if you're a Boehner or if you're a McConnell, it doesn't matter to you. Because you're not unhappy the way things are.
No, he's not. I mean, right now, people are more furious at Obama than they are at him in the general
yeah.
public. So to a two-party system guy, he's happy. He's winning. He's
yeah.
going to win. He's going to.
Yeah.
The Democrats are in serious trouble in November. That's a fact. Republicans will not be in serious trouble till 2016, and people realize he didn't solve anything. You didn't
yep.
fix anything.
That's right.
I agree with you. That is the worst thing. And it may help somebody like a Rand Paul because he clearly
well, that's what
has
I think.
A
yeah.
message.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
that's what I was saying. Maybe I didn't say it clearly, but I think
you did. I mean, I got
yeah.
the message. I'm thinking of a speech that Rand Paul made at Berkeley, California, believe it or not. He's at the University of California, Berkeley. Not exactly a Republican place to talk, right? But he's got a great shtick. I mean, he goes in and basically says, you remember Domino's when they ran their commercial and they basically admitted we have bad crust. We had to improve it, you know.
Yeah.
So we went out and we fixed it, and this is a new pizza for Domino's. We fixed our crust. And Rand Paul gets up there and says, you know, I'm with the Republicans. I'm here to admit we got bad crust.
Yeah.
I mean, we got to fix the crust in the bad. You know, there are things in the party we must improve. That we can get. I could get into those details too, but I believe Rand Paul is absolutely correct that we need to fix the foreign policy. I believe that is absolutely essential. We need to be serious about small government, in my opinion. Quit lying about it. Quit pretending we're for small government, and then we do TARP bailouts instead. Because mm-hmm. you know that is just inexcusable. I don't think we need to fix the social conservative issues, personally. I don't think that's the problem. I do think we need to back off the extremes. But frankly, yeah, the pro-life issue in particular is actually winning now. It's not losing. We might have to be softer on the gay marriage issue. That one looks like you got to adjust. But these are small changes, not major.
And these
are the kind of discussions you have to have. In a party.
And,
you have to have these discussions.
Yeah, and as a party, all you have to write into your platform is a state powers, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
I would do
federalism on every single
every
one of those.
State
absolutely.
Doesn't have to agree on abortion. We don't have
no.
a stand on abortion at the Washington, D.C. level. We don't have a stand on gay marriage at the Washington, D.C. level. Write that in your damn platform. We don't have a Washington, D.C. stand on these issues. You know, we have a Washington, D.C. stand on foreign policy. We have a Washington, D.C. stand on NSA spying. We have a Washington, D.C. stand on, the interstate highways. We have a Washington, D.C. stand on the things that we're supposed to have a Washington, D.C. stand on, and we don't have a Washington, D.C. stand on anything else.
Right. If it's a state matter, leave it to states and defend federalism. That's Republicans, I believe that's the right message anyway.
Yeah.
We'd have been better served if we'd have done that on all these issues to begin with, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, now we have to backtrack on it and you know, we don't look as credible. But I still think, you know, we're still better than Democrats on that one. So we should be okay.
Yeah.
But Rand Paul, Rick Perry makes that case too, incidentally. I mean, I'm not really a big Rick Perry fan, but I did read his book, and he's a big, strong believer in federalism. I honestly think the country was applauding him. You just get this feeling that when he went down there and secured that Texas border and just said, enough is enough, I'm going to secure the border of Texas, I'm the governor of the state, I think the rest of the country was just, good job, Rick Perry. You know, we're trying to pretend there's a law and then not enforcing it, too.
Yeah.
And try to, you know, double standards. People don't like that stuff. Nobody likes that. They're going to, if Perry's got a case, he'll be solid on that stuff. So the Republican Party's not over unless it truly commits suicide. I mean, I guess that's my message. You know, unless we truly insist on just jumping off this cliff one more time and thinking that the establishment's going to save the party. Oh, my goodness. That disaster could happen in 2016. Don't expect me to jump off with you. Yeah, I ain't jumping off with you, that's for sure.
So we're headed into the wrap now, Lloyd. SCR 38 is the bill that was introduced last legislative session in the Senate. It didn't even get to a hearing, but without us, I still don't have a good feel for what you and anyone who's in your close circle there is doing and who you're talking to. Without us stepping all over what you're trying to do, what should the average listener be doing to help you out?
I mean, right now they wouldn't be able to focus on a bill. So, you know, if that's what we are looking for, they can't do it. But to help us out, ask, you know, one thing that could help for sure would be to refer to SCR 38 from last year and pressure the people that didn't let it get to a hearing last time. You know, also ask your state senator, you know, what do you think about that? Would you be willing to sponsor it again? Nothing wrong with asking that question. We're still looking for a good sponsor. That's a fact. I mean, we have some people that we think could do it, but you look for the best chance to get it to a hearing and guide it through.
Right.
And so that would be very helpful to find somebody who really gets it. I don't want to name the names of some of the people I think will definitely, because I don't want to, they haven't committed to doing it yet, and I think it'd be unfair. But I guarantee you there's four or five good senators who have, you know, who would be very good to sponsor this and I think might do it. And they're on both sides of the state. They're all over. They've all expressed interest in it. They like it. I mean, we have champions. We do. It's just a question of which one we do and the timing. So, but ask your state senator, ask your state rep. Show them SCR 38 from 2014 session. Lamping proposed it. And, you know, what do they think of that? You know, do they like that idea or not? Would they vote for it or not?
Okay, don't stay away too long, Lloyd. We've actually got an election coming up, and then a legislative session starting very quickly after that. We'd like to stay in touch with you. We want and of course I want you back anytime. I enjoy as much our talks about things other than the SRA / SPA, and your opinion is always welcome here, even when it disagrees with mine.
Appreciate it. Ditto. Yeah, always good to talk to you. Always good to get that perspective. And,
yes, sir.
Find somebody else who understands. We got to get federalism back. We're on the same boat. Yep.
Thanks, Lloyd. Have a great night.
You too.
Good night, my friend. Lloyd Thomas Sloan, champion of the state repeal amendment for as long as I've known him. In fact, he and I got to know each other through this amendment. He was out touting it one day, and I actually contacted him and said, "Tell me a little bit more about this." I immediately liked it, and I've been following him and the progress of the SRA ever since. I believe that this amendment, and I'll say this again and again and again and again and again until I die or it happens, or it gets its chance and doesn't happen, is one of three. If we come away from a constitutional convention without this amendment as one of the three, it's a failure. The three amendments that we have got to get out of a constitutional convention are a repeal of the 17th Amendment and a reestablishment of the Senate of the United States as the power seat of the states, as the seat that the states have at the table of power, as a group of people. And Lloyd wants one state, one vote. I'm indifferent. One state, two votes is fine with me too. I don't care. But the Senate has to represent the interests of the states. We have to repeal the 16th, and in my opinion, replace it with the consumption tax. The income tax and the property tax are evil. They're inherently intrusive. They give the federal government an in into things that are yours, that the federal government has no business in. So we got to repeal 17, we got to repeal 16, and then, as importantly, we've got to have this state repeal amendment, a version of it. And if we don't come away from a convention or a petition process or whatever it is with those three amendments, we failed. If we do come away with those three, I believe, seriously, that we solve 90% of the problems of an out-of-control federal government. I believe that should the states be the United States Senate, should the 50 states be the represented bodies in the United States Senate, I believe we don't have Obamacare today. I believe we don't have Common Core today. I believe we don't have a lot of the things, a lot of the problems that we have today that clearly are not in the best interest of states, that are clearly not in the best interest of the sovereign people represented as sovereign states at the table of the cooperative of states. I believe that 90% of our money corruption problem in Washington, D.C. I believe that 90% of our political campaign problem in Washington, D.C., campaign financing problem in Washington, D.C. I believe that 90% of our term limits problem in Washington, D.C. I believe that 90% of our intrusion into our public and private lives that comes from Washington, D.C. can be fixed by repealing the 16th Amendment and replacing it with a consumption tax. I believe that 90% of all the problems created by Washington, D.C. could be undone by a state repeal amendment, by giving states the right to stand up, the constitutional authority to stand up to the federal government as a representative majority and say, "I'm sorry, that rule just doesn't sit well with us. We're not going to do that," and repeal any law, executive action, resolution, rule issued by Washington, D.C. that does not sit well with the real owners of the federal government, the 50 states. So I sincerely am on board with this state repeal amendment. I urge you to do the same. If you don't, if this is the first you've heard of it, I urge you to contact Lloyd Thomas Sloan. And I'll have his contact information up for you at Missouri Grassroots Radio on Facebook. I'll get that done tonight before I go to bed. And I urge you to get a hold of him. He is writing a book about this specific subject. He's already written a lot and can provide you with a lot of information about Madison's Lost Amendment. He's a champion of this. I urge you to get a hold of your legislator. If you've got a pencil and paper there, last year's bill was SCR 38, Senate Continuing Resolution 38, introduced by Senator Lamping, who is no longer with us. I don't mean to say that as though he were deceased, but he's no longer a senator. He did not run for re-election. So we need a champion of that in Jefferson City. If your senator is one of the good ones, get a hold of him and say, look at SCR 38 and let me know if you can get behind that for us, if you can sponsor it, if you can support it. It's been a good week for me. We've had some great times here. We had Keith Carmichael last night. We had Lloyd Thomas Sloan tonight. Next week on Friday, remember, I want everyone to have our number 347-677-1835 etched on a piece of paper, and I want us to have a open and honest discussion about this question March raised today. Did the governor of the state of Missouri have constitutional or legal authority to do what he did in Ferguson? I think it's an interesting question. I believe that that on one side, and I haven't thought a lot about this logically. I was busy today. March posted the question mid-morning. There's a long thread of discussion on it if you go to Locke and Smith on Facebook. A lot of knowledgeable discussion, a lot of somewhat less than knowledgeable discussion. But what immediately comes to my mind is two things, one on each side. Local is always better. Local authority is always best. Local control is always best. The more local control, the better it is. That's what we all say. That's what we all firmly believe. By the same token, state sovereignty demands that you recognize that even cities, even counties exist at the will of the state. The state of Missouri is the basic sovereign unit. It is the unit where the power resides, and the city of Springfield, the city of Ferguson, the county of St. Louis County, the county of Greene, the county of Jasper, they exist only at the will of the state of Missouri. They are powerless outside the will of the state of Missouri, and the executive of that state is Governor Jay Nixon, like him or not like him. So there's a little bit of weight on each side of that argument that I throw out to you as you think about this for a week. Do some research or not. Talk it over or not. But I really want next Friday night for us to have an open, honest dialogue on did the governor have the constitutional and or legal authority to supplant Ferguson's police department with the State Highway Patrol in that investigation. And let's talk about that. On Tuesday night, Cynthia Davis will be along with Homefront. On Wednesday night, Lisa Payne Nager will be along with the Culture Vigilante. Both outstanding shows. I'm working hard on getting something going for one of the empty nights that will be new and exciting. I'll spill the beans a little bit. I believe that in the next couple or 3 months, we will have one night a week dedicated to education and news on Agenda 21. It will be an Agenda 21 show. And there's a lot of educating that needs to go on there on Agenda 21. I mean, the tentacles of this monster are enormous. They are numerous, and they are long. The myriad of complexities that that exist in Agenda 21 and how it reaches down into the very core of your community, the very core of your home, the very soul of your neighborhood is astounding with a one-world government mentality. I think it's time. I think it's time we dedicated an hour a week, 2 hours a week, a show a week minimum to educating and keeping you posted on this one subject. It's that important in my mind. I'm not the guy for that. I've spent all of my recreational study time on this state sovereignty issue on the fair tax issue. I don't know. I'm ashamed to say, but not afraid to say a lot about Agenda 21. I'm ready to learn. I'm ready to explore. I'm ready to be kept abreast of what's going on. I hope you are too. And we're working hard on making that a regular part of Missouri Grassroots Radio. Another thing that we're working on, and we have a couple of open nights, is property rights. Property rights is more than just you saying, hey, I can do whatever the hell I want to in my yard. Property rights is a foundational principle of the representative republic, of the understanding of what liberty is. So we're working on getting an hour a week dedicated to property rights and issues with property rights and what property rights means and what's going on in the property rights arena. So for now, though, we have Cynthia on Tuesday. We have Lisa on Wednesday. I'll be back on Friday and Saturday of next week. Mike Slack will be back with us. Listen, if you missed Preppers and Patriots today, it'll be there again tomorrow starting at 9 o'clock. If you went today, go back tomorrow. I mean, there are some awesome speakers there. There are people giving presentations hourly in two different theaters. There are some awesome vendors there. There is an all-star lineup of people there that you need to meet, that you need to talk to, that you just need to know. Ike Skelton was there, speaking of Agenda 21. Mike Slack, of course, is there. Doug Inyart was there. Keith Carmichael's there, talking to as many people as he can about the Convention of States. Mike Evans was there. Beth Ann was there. Dr. Bones and Amy were there. And the list goes on and on. I've forgotten some people that I talked to today, that I saw today. But you need to get out tomorrow and see them as well. It'll be starting at 9 o'clock in the morning. I think Mike said it goes to 7 tomorrow night. It's $10 to get in. $10 lasts as long as you want to stay. It gets you a stamp on your hand. I've still got a stamp on my hand. I'm going to cover my hand up before I shower tonight so I don't lose my stamp. And I can get back in tomorrow. So $10 gets you in. I believe next year Mike looks for a bigger venue. I mean, this thing was packed. It was absolutely packed. I talked to some militia people there today. I talked to some heirloom seed people there today. I talked to some biofuel people there today. I talked to some solar power your own home people there today. I talked to someone who builds storm shelters under your garage floor. I can't even remember it all. I'm getting old and I'm getting forgetful. But you want to catch that tomorrow if you didn't catch it today, and you want to catch it again tomorrow if you did catch it today. That's Preppers and Patriots. It's at the Doubletree in Springfield. That's on the corner of Kearney and Glenstone. So there it is. Tomorrow your day is set. You're going to Preppers and Patriots in Springfield at the Doubletree. Tuesday night, your agenda is set. You're going to catch Cynthia Davis. Wednesday night, you're going to catch Lisa Payne Nager. And then you're going to be back with us next Friday night to talk about the powers of the governor and then you're going to be back with us next Saturday night. I haven't exactly decided what we've got going next Saturday night, but it'll be just as fun as any other Saturday night you're going to spend next week. I'm Dave. Good night. Thanks for joining us. Thank you, Lloyd Sloan, for your time. It was great. Good night, folks.
There are so many contradictions in all these messages we send. Keep asking, how do I get out of here? Where do I fit?